This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
The moment Brian Koberger was hauled into a courtroom in early 2023, the lights started going out on public access. It wasn't just that information slowed down. It was like somebody hit a switch and said, "We'll take it from here." What followed over the next 2 years wasn't just a normal murder case working its way through a system. It was a slow-motion blackout. Piece by piece, document by document, the Koberger case disappeared behind court seals, closed doors, and blackout orders. The crazy part is a lot of it was absolutely by the book. That's how it works. And they did a pretty good job of it. But things have since changed. And we're going to talk about all of that. What was going on behind the scenes? What do we still not know now that Judge Hippler has put a lot more out there and has unsealed many documents? What still lies behind the seal that we will wait to see once we actually get to trial here, supposedly in late summer, August? In the comment section, let me know your thoughts on where this case stands, what you're interested in seeing, what you think we may see, what you don't think we will see, anything. Give us your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. I love checking that out and hearing your guys' thoughts. And if you're subscribing to us or not subscribing to us yet on YouTube, please do press that subscribe button right now so you don't miss any of our updates on this case. And if you're listening to the podcast, wherever it may be, hit subscribe on your platform of choice so you don't miss our updates on this case. It all started with the basics. After Koberger was arrested, the search warrants for the apartment at Washington State University and his family's home in Pennsylvania were sealed. Normally, those documents would become public right after the arrest. In this case, though, they stayed locked away for weeks. When they finally did surface, they painted a pretty ugly picture. Bloodstains, dark clothing, gloves, a cheek swab for DNA, but by then, the story had already been told to the public without the messy details. By holding the warrants back, investigators kept control over the narrative. That was just the first layer. Then came the grand jury. Instead of a public preliminary hearing where the defense could cross-examine witnesses and start poking holes in the case, prosecutors went to a grand jury behind closed doors. By law, grand jury proceedings are secret, no matter what. But that secrecy wasn't just a legal technicality. It was a strategic move. Without a public hearing, the defense didn't get to challenge any early witnesses in front of the cameras. The public didn't get to see how strong or shaky the state's case looked when put under pressure. Koberger was indicted without the public hearing a word. And just like that, major opportunity for transparency was gone. I'm not saying any of this is wrong. This is just how this went. We're going through kind of the chronological timeline of why we are where we're at today. If all that wasn't enough, the court slapped on a broad gag order. Remember that back in January 23, just weeks after Koberger's arrest? It wasn't your garden variety, don't talk to the media rule. It covered lawyers, law enforcement, and even agents connected to either side. Later, they expanded it to include attorneys for the victims' families. In theory, the goal was to protect the right to a fair trial. In practice, it meant that even the people who normally talk, like the cops, the prosecutors, or the defense lawyers, had to zip it shut. No updates, no clarifications, no fighting in the press. And if that felt suffocating to reporters and the public, it was supposed to. The idea was to stop the drip, drip, drip of information that could influence a future jury before the trial even started. It didn't stop with the paperwork and the press. It moved into the courtroom itself. Take the investigative genetic genealogy evidence, or IGG for short. That's the cutting-edge DNA technology the FBI allegedly used to connect Koberger to the crime scene. It's a hot topic nationwide, a real future of policing kind of thing. But when the defense moved to challenge how the FBI did it, the hearings weren't open to the public. The court closed the doors, citing the sensitivity of the investigative methods and the need to protect innocent relatives whose DNA might have swept up or been swept up in that search. They even sealed the arguments about whether the hearing should be sealed. Yes, a secret argument about whether the argument should be secret. The records weren't just hidden during the hearings either. The suppression motions, the response, the expert testimony, all of it went under seal. No one outside the legal teams and the judge knew the details. Only months later did the court unseal a heavily redacted transcript so the public could get a taste of what went down behind the closed doors. And even then, large parts were blacked out, leaving giant blanks where key names, methods, and data points were. And now, some of this secrecy wasn't just the court being cagey. A lot of it was legally required. Grand jury secrecy, for instance, isn't optional. It's baked into the law to protect witnesses, prevent tampering, and shield the reputation of people who might not even get charged. Same with the sealing of the FBI's forensic methods. Exposing the exact techniques could not only jeopardize future investigations, it could also spark privacy concerns that ripple way beyond the case. Other parts were about protecting the trial itself. Koberger's defense argued from day one that the pretrial publicity could poison the jury pool. And to be fair, they were not wrong. This wasn't some minor local crime. It was a quadruple homicide involving young college students with headlines screaming across every platform you could think of. Jurors walked into court already convinced Koberger was guilty because of what they saw on TV or TikTok. The defense would have grounds for appeal before the trial even ended. By keeping motions and hearings under wraps, the court was trying to make sure the eventual jury came in cold, well, as best they can. Not pre-cooked by months of speculation and leaks. There was another reason things stayed hidden. Privacy. The two surviving roommates who lived through that nightmare had their names and statements carefully guarded at first. Their text messages, the 911 call, even the early interviews were either sealed or heavily redacted. Victims' families also had their privacy protected, especially when discussions arose about whether family members could be present in the courtroom during the trial. And then there was Koberger's own personal information, like his mental health history. In late 2024, the defense filed sealed motions arguing that Koberger's autism spectrum disorder diagnosis should bar the death penalty. The filings included private medical records and expert evaluations, so naturally, they stayed sealed. Medical privacy isn't just a courtesy, it is actually a legal right. But in early 2025, even there, in that area of this case, even the judge started signaling that things had gone too far. In March, Judge Stephen Hippler basically called a timeout and told both sides they needed to pump the brakes on sealing everything under the sun. In a sharply worded order, he said that secrecy had become the norm rather than the exception. That wasn't acceptable. He reminded everyone that the public has a constitutional right to see what happens in its courts, and that redactions, not total sealing, should be the first option. From that point forward, you could see the court trying to open its blinds just a little. Just a little. Some documents that were fully sealed got rifled in redacted form, or refiled in redacted form. Transcripts from closed hearings started trickling out, and the sensitive parts blacked out to the broader arguments left intact. Still, by the time we reach the spring of 25, a huge amount of the pretrial battle in the Koberger case has unfolded behind heavy curtains. The public has seen the headlines and the tip of the iceberg, but most of the legal arguments, evidence disputes, and strategic maneuvering have happened in the shadow world of sealed documents and closed courtrooms. And that's not just a fluke in this case. It's the system working exactly the way it's supposed to. When the stakes are as high as they are here, it's not a lot of room for error. Now, that darkness didn't just happen for the sake of order and fairness. It did not. It's because it pretty much had to. Since the Brian Koberger case hasn't just been about shielding delicate information, it's been a deliberate tool. Both the prosecution and the defense have been using it like a scalpel, carving out exactly what they want jurors, reporters, and the public to see, and just as importantly, what they want to disappear until trial. This isn't some courtroom clerical accident. Again, strategy, high-level stakes, high stakes, and very intentional. Let's start with the prosecution, because they've been playing the slow, deliberate game from the start. From day one, they had a golden thread of evidence. The DNA match on the knife sheath left at the scene. That match didn't come from a swab at the scene or a known suspect. It was reportedly the result of investigative genetic genealogy, the process of using public or semi-public genealogy databases to reverse engineer the suspect's identity. It's relatively new, kind of. It's somewhat controversial, though it doesn't need to be. It is just somewhat new, doesn't change the reliability of it. And it's been challenged in other cases across the country, again, because it's new, you know, like within the last 10 years. So what did the prosecution do with that info? They locked it down tight. The defense tried multiple times to force open that door. They filed motion after motion asking for details on how the FBI built a family tree, how the match was confirmed, and which databases were used. The prosecution resisted at every turn. Their position was simple. Too much detail could compromise ongoing investigations and reveal private medical information from people who aren't even part of the case. Whether or not that's a fair argument is besides the point. It was effective. The court agreed multiple times that those methods were too sensitive to expose publicly before trial. The hearing on the DNA challenge closed, the filing sealed, even the fight about whether to unseal them was sealed. The prosecution kept the core of their case, what they're likely to lean on hard, in front of a jury under wraps, long enough to avoid pretrial scrutiny, media skepticism, or public debate. Whether you believe that was effective or not depends on what planet you're living on. And it wasn't just the DNA. No, the prosecution also moved quickly to control the courtroom narrative by limiting what the defense could say about other potential suspects. In February 25, they filed a motion asking the court to prevent Koberger's team from suggesting someone else committed the murders, unless they could actually back it up with real evidence. Not a theory, not a vague implication, actual admissible proof. That motion was public. But any follow-up discussions or filings on the subject were likely cloaked. That move may have looked procedural. But it was a strategic message. Keep the trial about Koberger, not about a bunch of what-ifs. If the defense had any ideas about planting seeds of doubt based on speculation or internet rumors, the prosecution was aiming to shut it down early. And while the state may have allowed some facts to come out, like the probable cause affidavit and basic timeline, they've kept the trial narrative clean. They haven't over-explained the evidence. They haven't litigated in the media. They've kept their powder dry. That's not just because of the gag order, it's part of the trial strategy. Keep the jury's first real exposure to the evidence inside the courtroom, under oath, with controlled framing. No leaks, no premature spin, no overexposure that gives the defense time to prepare a counter message in the media. From a strategic standpoint, the prosecution has made sure that the first time the full force of their evidence hits the public, or more importantly, the jury, is when it counts the most. Now, flip the table and look at the defense. Koberger's attorney have played a secrecy game too, just in a more targeted way. They fought for transparency at times, but only when it served them. Take the DNA again. While the prosecution has been working overtime to keep the genealogy process sealed, the defense did something unexpected. They asked the court to unseal it. They actually pushed for public access. Why? Because by early 2025, the defense had already laid the groundwork to suggest that the DNA match wasn't as airtight as it seemed. Their expert witness, Cy Ray, had started casting doubt on the prosecution's cell tower data. The defense likely saw an opportunity if the public could see how the DNA match was pieced together, especially if it looked complicated or unclear. It might soften the perception that it was the nail in the coffin. That wasn't about transparency for transparency's sake. That was optics. The defense wanted to get ahead of the story. They wanted the jury pooled, media, and the public to start wondering whether the state's star evidence was really as solid as it was being made out to be. They could stir just even a little uncertainty in the court of public opinion before the trial. They'd be planting seeds that could grow into reasonable doubt later. But when the information didn't serve them, total blackout. Take the autism diagnosis. In early 25, the defense filed a sealed motion arguing that Koberger's autism spectrum disorder should be considered a mitigating factor in barring the death penalty. That motion included medical records, evaluations, and expert opinions. None of that was made public. The entire thing stayed sealed, and for a good reason. Autism diagnoses are complex, and they're often misunderstood. If the public, or worse, pretrial jurors saw headlines like "Defense claims autism is shield against death penalty," it could generate backlash, misunderstanding, or even stigma that could hurt the client before trial. But it got out. So instead, the defense kept it quiet, or they tried to, not because it wasn't central to their strategy, but because they weren't ready to explain it just yet. They'll probably roll it out if and when the case reaches a penalty phase, when the jury has already made a decision about guilt and is deciding whether Koberger lives or dies. Until then, the less said, the better. That's a consistent theme with this case. And the defense, they filed their motion and another motion after seal, especially when it came to attacking the indictment itself. In October of 23, they started challenging the grand jury process, alleging improper instructions or procedural errors. The public didn't get to hear the arguments. Even the judge's rulings were sealed. But the defense was playing a longer game. They were preserving those issues for appeal. If Koberger is convicted, those seals, motions become, well, they can become part of the record, and they can bring a higher court in then. And by keeping the details hidden for now, they don't risk getting picked apart or misinterpreted before they are fully developed. In other words, secrecy for the defense hasn't just been about protecting Koberger's privacy, it's about preserving leverage. Levels, Jerry. Levels. Controlling the timing, controlling the framing, controlling when the story is told and who tells it. What we're seeing in the Koberger case is not just a legal chess match, it's an information war. Each side is trying to manage not just what happens in court, but how the public perceives it before anyone even takes the stand. It's a pretrial arms race built on sealed files, redacted documents, and courtroom doors that don't open until it's too late for opinions to change. Because when the jury finally sits down in that courtroom, the idea is that they come in blank. Not empty-handed, but untainted. Not learning or not leaning one way or the other. And both sides know that if they can control what those jurors are exposed to before that moment, control of what they see, what they hear, what they don't hear, they're not just protecting fairness, they are shaping the battlefield. And that battlefield, it's already set. There's a lot that's going to be coming in this trial. What's going to happen? Who's going to say what? What evidence is going to make it into light? There's going to be a lot of things that we don't know that will make their voice heard in the coming months. Tell me what you think about all the secrecy in this trial. It doesn't seem like it right now because there's been a lot of openness in the last month or two. But for a long while there, it was anyone's guess what they had. And now those lights are shining. I'll be maybe just a flashlight right now on the bunker that holds that information. Tell me in the comments your thoughts. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our stories on this case and the many that we follow for you right here at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. My name is Tony Bruschi, and we will talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. She was the perfect wife. Always smiling, always supportive. A pillar of the community. Beloved by friends. Adored by family. And secretly researching undetectable poisons in her spare time. Maybe it was the way he chewed. Maybe she just got bored. Or maybe, just maybe, she had been planning this since the honeymoon. But if he had just paid attention, if he had just known what to look for, if he had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and learned the red flags, he could have heard every episode of Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Ad-free, and before everyone else, he could have seen it coming. Instead, he's 6 feet under, and she's shopping for husband number two. Don't be like him. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.